Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Hope you're all doing great. Today we take a breather from the ugliness of the politics of this world, and we're going to talk about the bigger picture with my co-host Michael Rakia. And Michael's got some pretty exciting news. Maybe I should let you give out the good news, Michael.
Oh, hi, Maria. Hi, everybody. It's nice to be back. And yes, 3/4 of an hour ago, I got my eager hands on my personal copy of Joseph's sixth book, which is called From Here to Infinity. And this has taken 2 years to bring to this stage. And we're always extremely relieved when a book is in hard copy form and available in the world. Despite it being on 3 or 4 separate computers and us having multiple recordings of the trans-sessions that it contains, the field doesn't want this information out. And so at every twist and turn, we have obstacles that we have to overcome. But yes, it's out there. So that's a great feeling for me today.
Well, great. So people can go to your website, josephspeaks.com, and order the book?
Yes, indeed they can.
And my copy, is it personally autographed?
Well, Jen sent it out, so I don't think it is, but I'll send you one if you want.
That's okay.
With the greatest of pleasure.
Well, Michael, needless to say, the field is one big mess, and it just seems like every day it gets worse and worse. You know, I absolutely send, you know, good energy and Reiki to the field on a daily basis to try to change mass consciousness. Would you say that mass consciousness is what creates the field?
Yes, and we all contribute to it, of course. Yeah, by its very definition, mass consciousness. And we don't realize that our hidden thoughts and our depressions and our negative attitudes towards things stoke the fires of the field. And it's very difficult because we're in the midst of things, aren't we? It's very difficult to live here. But we have to be aware spiritually that when we put positive energies into our lives, we also put positive energies into the field. So we don't operate separate from the field. If we improve our own lives, we improve spiritually, we improve the consciousness, the mass consciousness of mankind. We illuminate the mass consciousness of mankind. And that's our mission, to put light into the darkness. Light so that people can actually see what they're doing and realize what they're doing and move back from those negative actions and remember who they are.
Absolutely. Well, it's sometimes hard to do for a lot of people because the world just seems to kick everybody's ass these days.
Yes.
Question for you, and this one was from one of our listeners. It said, when we die in a horrific circumstance, like a car accident or we're murdered, does the soul leave the body before it feels pain?
I can only answer that by my experience of death. And by that I mean the couple of times when I've been in trance and have wanted to go to the other side. And have been just a footfall away from going. There was an immediate release from the heaviness of the body, from the worries of the world, and a great joy and a great bliss in going back home. I was prevented, of course, from doing that, and the guide who was with me on both occasions told me to turn around, and what did I think I was doing? And I had to go straight back. You've got to consider that we are never really in the body at all, only to a small degree of consciousness, and that our greater consciousness is what we reunite with once we've moved on from this physical plane. And I'm pretty sure that in horrific circumstances, there is a very quick transition from this state of consciousness, a return to that elevated state of consciousness. And I'm pretty sure that there is no pain involved either. There will be an initial conscious reaction to what's happening, and then we're away from it. Mm-hmm. And we find ourselves in fascinating circumstances, being asked to join perhaps some kind of transport to be taken to where we're supposed to go. That's only an illusion, of course. It's because we need that sort of physical viewpoint after we've just departed the physical body. But we are taken to where we are supposed to go and find ourselves in an elevated position, in a healthy position, in a happy position. Then, of course, many other things happen to us. We have to review our lives at a later stage. But the initial projection from this world to the next one is not, I feel, a painful one. And it's a very rapid one, too. It's a matter of lifting one foot in this life and putting the next foot down in the next life.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that the pain people feel here is just the pain of their human physical consciousness?
It is a collective pain. It is pain that expresses itself on a physical level, on a mental level, and it is the pain that goes back to the time when we got things wrong and continue to get things wrong because subconsciously we still believe that we're right. We still believe that the choice we made millennia ago is right, and that choice was to speed up creation. And in doing so, we created a world that locked us in. And as a result of locking ourselves into this world, we experience pain. We shouldn't experience pain on any level. Our bodies shouldn't be as dense as they are. We shouldn't experience loss. We should be able to see instantly the people who have moved on from this plane of existence. We shouldn't experience mental pain due to relationships, due to cruelty, due to people upsetting us. All these things are power plays that take place as a result of the fall so long ago. We are plugged into negativity, and as a result of being in the wrong set of vibrations, we experience pain. But pain is not our natural state. And many people say, why does God cause pain, and why does God allow pain to happen? Well, first of all, God doesn't cause pain. Our natural state as angelic beings is one of bliss, not one of pain. And he allows the pain to happen because we have free will. Free will is a constant throughout the universe, and it is up to us to decide against the pain. And we decide against the pain by injecting light into the world and into our own bodies so that we can reset the world as to what it was before we made the mistake of the fall.
Well, that's fairly well said. But, you know, I think when you were talking, I was thinking about the programming that begins on this planet from the minute you're born. And, you know, well, I'm thinking about the Bible where, you know, immediately, I think in the first chapter of the Bible, you're convinced that, you know, through one man, you know, one man's sin, pain entered the world. And I think people buy that story so much that they just come to expect it.
Yes, we were told, as you quite rightly say, that we are miserable sinners, almost from the get-go, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And we're not miserable sinners. As my teacher used to say, I'm not a miserable sinner, I quite enjoy it. But we are not branded with sin. The origins of the sin myth lie in the fall, and religions have grabbed onto that origin of the sin myth, and the sin myth exists because it is a memory of us having taken a misstep. Not a sin, simply a decision that wasn't good for us. Mm-hmm. So that's where the myth of sin comes from that point at which we separated ourselves in physical consciousness from God. But we're not sinners. Every morning, every evening, every minute of every day, we have the chance to reevaluate ourselves, to look at the way that we are dealing with life and to make different choices. And to understand that if we bring the God within into our lives again, those lives transform. And not only do we transform our own lives, we transform the lives of everyone around us to a lesser or a greater extent. And ultimately, we transform the lives of everyone around the planet. We lift them up by however small a degree into the light by absorbing and practicing light living and light giving ourselves.
Right. So it goes back to basically the teaching of Gandhi. If you want to change the world, you change it one person at a time. And
absolutely,
it starts with you.
Yes. And you don't dictate to people. You don't try and change people through violence. You don't try and change people by telling them what they've got to do. You send them enough light to review how they are for themselves. And then when they have enough light surrounding them and within them, they look at their actions in an illuminated state and recognize those actions that are no longer of use to them or of use to the world. And they begin to evolve and to elevate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to go back to something you said a little earlier, where you said that we never really fully, are in our bodies anyway. And I know that that's a hard concept for people, and it's an argument that I try to present to people when they're so rabidly against abortion. Oh, you're killing that soul. It's a living child. And I often say, just common sense, if our higher soul, our higher selves are so massive and huge, who would want to be confined in that tiny little space for 9 months? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Look what happens to us at night, Maria. We suddenly lose consciousness from here, and we're in completely different landscapes, aren't we?
Right.
And we have no sense of the body that's lying asleep in bed until we return to it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have this sense of time having passed in a different dimension. And that, to me, is one of the proofs that we are not what we appear to be. Also, going back to the two occasions when I almost died in a trance state, there is this great feeling of, as you quite rightly say, being not only liberated, but greater than you are within your physicality. There is a sense of huge freedom and connection and joy. And that is a state that we can reach in meditation as well. We talk about meditation, and a lot of people say, oh, I could never do that, you know. But it is vital for some time each day to reach into the God within, to shut out the physicality, to shut out the physical world, and to connect with that feeling that we can have here now to a degree, that we are greater than the sum of our problems here, and greater than the sum of our physicality and our mentality.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you look at, and I've had, some people take offense when they ask me, do you think the human race can be saved? And I have to tell them honestly, at the rate I see this planet going and the destruction, the human-caused destruction, no, I just don't see it. And, people get very upset with me when I say that because they're still waiting for a savior to come. And they tell me that, ETs, this one, that one, everybody's going to save everything. And they just don't understand that we're the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes, we are our own saviors. And I have to say that during the transmission of From Here to Infinity, the 18 trans sessions that we sat for in order to bring the book through, there were points at which Joseph came through and said, we are increasing the amount of light around you. We are increasing the energy that we're sending to you in order that we can keep on the same level of communication with you because things have worsened.
Mm-hmm.
But the reverse of that is that Joseph always says, if there wasn't hope, I wouldn't bring the information through.
Right.
If I didn't think that I could get as many souls as possible out of here, or ultimately, and in an ideal situation, change the field back to light, then I would simply sit back, allow the human race to go into stasis, allow the planet to repair itself, and then when they came back, we would proceed with the procedure again of trying to bring light through to them.
Mm.
So the fact that Joseph actually does come through and does communicate with us, and does bring through this information, is heartening to me, because it means that even though there is a terrible state of affairs in the world at the moment, there is still hope. And he also says that every soul who sits for the light is more powerful than 1,000 souls that don't.
Well, so, I could understand that, but, you know, it's like, you know, I remember one of your books, I don't remember which one, he really spoke about the field collapsing and that we were running out of time. And when I look at, you know, when I look at the news, when I look at the disasters on Earth, you know, Fukushima, oil spills, this, that, the other thing, and most people still not paying attention, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, how much more time can this go on?
Well, he often says that he won't give us a precise amount of time that's left. He did moot 70 to 80 years in the early books. Mm-hmm. He says, I can't tell you. I know, based on the scale on a day-to-day basis, to put it in earthly terms, but I can't tell you, because if I tell you, you will lock that into your consciousness, right, and you will make it a more concrete event. You will make it a more certain event. So what I've got to do each day that you are here is to say to you, send out the light, bring the light into yourself, and you are making a difference. Even if that difference is only a few seconds a day, mm-hmm, you are being given more time to consider your position and to change your position.
Right.
And yes, it's a terrible world. That's why we have this communication at this time. That's why Joseph has come back. But there is a revelation in the book that I don't want to talk about yet, but I will next time.
Okay, but give me a chance to read it. Right.
It really puts things in perspective, Maria. I don't want to spoil that surprise.
Don't spoil the surprise.
Joseph says.
But you
something
know,
Joseph says, and it shocked us.
It shocked you? Oh, boy, I can't wait to read it. One of the questions, and a lot of younger people truly do believe this, so I'm going to ask you the question. Are we here to save the planet?
Yes. We're here to save ourselves as well. I think it's great to be able to talk to young people, and if there are young people out there, please, as the next generation, have the respect for the planet that we, the older generation, don't have. Please love this world and realize that it is a part of you, that it is a spirit, that it allows you to exist here, that you are vitally connected to it. And please treat it with respect and plant those trees and love the areas that are in trouble physically, geographically, and send out your light to them. You have a great opportunity to do this. And don't look at our mistakes. Look at doing things right. Don't look at the way that we've treated the world. Look at the way that you can treat the world and love it better. Because if we don't love it better, as you say, Maria, we will be removed once again, and the cycle will begin again. Mm-hmm. We'll have to come back.
No.
We'll have to come back.
No, never
no,
come
not
back.
Ours. We've made the decision not to.
No, but never as a, come as back.
A, as a species, if we put ourselves into stasis, the souls that put themselves into stasis by causing the end of society have to come back, because there's nowhere else for them to go. This is why the cycle repeats.
Mm-hmm.
So if they haven't learned enough about the spiritual side of life, if they haven't decided to move on, then this is where they got to come back to.
Well.
So we've got to try and prevent that happening.
Right. Well, we could do the best we can. You know, we do it one person at a time, I think, is still the most
Absolutely.
Effective way. Some other questions that I got, Michael. And I could be because some people haven't read your books yet, and please check out Michael's website, and I recommend reading every book. Where did the vibration of angels go off course?
The vibration of angels, not all angels, but we are all angelic children. You know, I've seen angels, as I'm sure you have, Maria, and almost been sort of pushed onto my knees by the amount of power and light and color and sound vibration that these wonderful beings give out as they communicate with us. But I'd never considered before the Joseph communication started that we might be angels ourselves. And Joseph explains it as us being angelic children, and that it's the angelic, it's the nature of angelic children to create worlds. To create worlds to move through, to create perspectives to move through, so that they grow and enjoy the experiences that they've created and bring back the results of those experiences to the Godhead, so that the Godhead evolves. And that's the natural course of things angelically. The angels, which are part of God, as we are part of God because we are angels, exist in joy to explore potential and to bring forth from potential landscapes, worlds, that they then visit in a refined aspect of physicality and move through those landscapes to gather experience and then move on from those experiences to create new experiences. And it's a joyful, endless, blissful situation. Except for us. Because we...
we messed up this one.
We entered a debate millennia ago as angelic children. We entered a debate insisting that we had a better way to create than the status quo, than the established way of creating worlds. And a debate went backwards and forwards. Not a war, not a battle, but a debate, a civilized debate. And we listened to all the arguments, and then we said, well, we're going to go ahead with it anyway, because we feel that we can bring a greater glory to God by examining potential, by examining existence in this particular way. And we speeded up matter, and at that point we became trapped in the illusion of this world, trapped in the dream that we'd created. So we are still angelic children, we are still angels within, we are still angelic beings, but we are angelic beings who have entered the ghost train, if you like. Mm. We've got onto the ghost train ride, and we believe that the ghost train ride is all there is. And what's more, we don't believe that we can get off the ride or that we can influence the ride. And we can, which is why this quest for light transmission is going on at the moment, to allow us to get off the ride, to allow us to change the ride, and to allow us to revert back consciously, in full consciousness, to the angelic beings that we truly are.
So it's kind of like we were the gamers in the sky, creating new video games to go play in and then come back and give a review of the video game. And somewhere along the line, we created a video game from hell and got trapped in it.
We did indeed. Yeah. And then believed ourselves to be the game.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than the creators of the game. Rather than beings that are able to alter the game. We are trapped inside the game. We are trapped until we remember our heritage. All those faculties that we had as angelic beings are still with us. But they're buried deep within us, and they are wrapped within the layers of physicality and layers of negativity that we have created over thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
What we have to realize is that we still have that God potential, and we still have that potential for change that is our nature. That's what we do. We're angels. That's our job.
Right.
And we've forgotten that.
Exactly.
We have to remember that that's our job. And get back to the 9-to-5 job of an angel of changing this place into a light-filled, joyous environment.
Mm. You mentioned something about angels having sound and resonance. And one of my listeners actually in Brazil had asked me to ask you if sound comes from Earth's resonance. Does Earth give off her own sound? Because a lot of people are hearing sounds above the Earth and in different parts of the Earth. Is that the Earth resounding like that?
Well, everything, every physical object has a sight, it has a structure, it has a sound, and it has a perfume. And those of us that are a little more psychic than others, a little more actively psychic, can pick these things up. The whole of creation can be compared to a great symphony. And connection to the angelic host means connection to this wonderful world of color and feeling and sound. But the sound is harmonious. It's not the sort of sound you hear outside when somebody's taking a drill to the road and digging up the road. It is wonderful, harmonious, soothing, healing, restorative sound. Very emotional sound as well. To tune into this symphony of creation is something that wells up from the heart and makes you feel part of this enormous family. It makes you feel that everything is all right. So yes, the earth has a sound. Everything has a sound. You know, the objects you've got as loose change in your pocket, it's sound. The objects that are on your mantelpiece have a sound.
Right.
But they also have other vibrations. They have a color vibration. And they have, according to Joseph, although I've never experienced this, I have experienced the sound. But he says in the spirit world, there's also a perfume as well. There is a perfume with each object. So we are operating here from a very limited and restricted sense of our senses. It's as though we put this iron helmet on and we can only hear things and sense things dimly through this iron helmet. But our expanded senses can pick up the most wondrous expressions of creation. For example, to go through a field of grass and to have the grass ripple and give off a wonderful musical symphony simply by existing and having a joy in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And we've closed ourselves off from all that so that we are distanced from our true angelic senses. But nevertheless, those aspects of creation are there all the time, and we can reach them if we become still, and if we meditate, and if we ask. And if we look with our angelic eyes, with psychic eyes, with spiritual eyes, and listen with angelic ears, all that's there for us.
Right. Well, so who doesn't like the sound of the wind whistling through the trees, or the sound of the ocean, or the smell of the ocean, or the smell of a pine forest? You know, but I think, you know, it's also part of this game or this matrix to push people away from nature. And I think that's when man really started becoming neurotic, when they forgot they're connected to every other living thing.
Yes, yes. And to also forgot to let go, to put ourselves in natural positions, to go into the forest, to sit by the ocean, and to let go of what we protect the most, and that's our individuality. And in letting go of our individuality, we enhance our angelic individuality, but also revel in our connection to all things.
Mm-hmm.
And derive great comfort from realizing that there's no difference between the ocean and ourselves. There's no difference between the forest and ourselves. They're the same thing. We can put our consciousness into the forest, and the forest can put its consciousness into us. And we can experience together. We can share experience and then take those experiences back to the Godhead. It's a wonderful, wonderful world outside of the video game we've been talking about.
Right.
But many of us are frightened of that. We're frightened of change. We're frightened of reaching out. We're frightened of what we perceive as loss of personality and individuality, which doesn't exist. And it's time to get over our fears before it's too late, and to investigate the God within, to investigate the light within, and to investigate our connection to all things. It's a great joy in that.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you talked a little bit about free will, and yes. I wanted to ask your opinion on free will, but I was always a but. When I'm working one-on-one with a client, and I can actually look at their Akashic records, what did they lay out for their lifetime this time? Where are they headed? What's their best option? What I find is when people don't follow the plan they set up for themselves and use free will, they create all kinds of problems they didn't need to have. So I'm interested to know where you feel, or what you feel about free will.
I think there is a theme to what we've been talking about tonight, and these things are planned ahead of schedule, I'm sure, Maria, on a spiritual level. And that theme is that we are only operating from one level of our senses.
Mm-hmm.
And free will applies. That example applies to free will as well, in that there is a greater free will. There is the angelic free will that we have as part of ourselves. And then there's the free will that we put in the way of that on a physical level and the obstacles that we place in our own way. I feel strongly that free will exists because God can't go against himself. How could God create his children that are part of him, that are aspects of him, and then restrict them? He couldn't say to his children, go out, bring me experience, but only experience as I want it. Mm. So on a God level, free will is a universal concept that I absolutely believe in. But then you see we're in a mess here, and we're in a mess here because we're using that free will, but to a smaller extent from the point of view of our physicality and mentality, not from our spirituality. And so we're using our free will to say, yeah, I want to stay here. Yes, it's wonderful. I hate some aspects of it, but I like the ice cream. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I like the sex, or I like the new car, or right. I like the bigger house, or I like the holidays. And so we're using our free will that is skewed because of the effects of the fall to anchor ourselves here. What we need to do is to examine all aspects of our free will. And we do that by becoming quiet. We do that by going within. And we do that by asking of ourselves, is this really what I wish to do? Mm-hmm. Are there other aspects open to me? Are there greater aspects open to me? As I, in free will, connect with my God, how does the landscape change? How does my inner landscape change? How does my outer landscape change? And then we start to make decisions based on our greater free will, our free will as angelic beings. And then the obstacles start to disappear, and the maze becomes a straight line, a straight road that leads to ascension and back to God, and we put right what we got wrong.
Right.
But God can't make an exception and say, well, there's free will throughout the universe, but not on Earth. Because you lot got it wrong.
Right. But I mean, I tend to see people use it to run into burning buildings, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, when I was a young girl, my specialty was swimming against the tide. You know, pushing things that weren't meant to push. And, you know, maybe it was the Italian in me, Michael. I don't know. But I was so goddamn stubborn. And, you know, I just kept getting slapped down. And it took me, you know, decades to learn to stop trying to force things, stop swimming against the tide, and just go with the flow. And once you get into the flow or the zen or whatever people want to call it, life becomes so much more easy and so much more receiving.
To let go. It's back to that letting go, which people are loath to do. They feel that they want to control their lives, and that's fine. But they're controlling their lives from the limited perspective of being within the video game. Mm-hmm. What they have to do is to let go and allow their greater self and allow their connection to God to bring to them and move them through the circumstances that are best for them and best for everyone else that they connect to.
Mm-hmm. Michael, we're going to take a short break, so stay with us. When we come back, I got lots more questions, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Spiritual Professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience, and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground. Out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at maria.net. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture with my co-host Michael Rakia. Check out his site and absolutely order his new book, because we'll be talking about that on the next show. JosephSpeaks.com. And you don't need to be religious to read this material. I find this material has lots and lots of pure spiritual truth in it. So whatever word you want to use for God, creator, higher self, whatever, irrelevant. They're just words. And unfortunately, most of us don't use more than 800 words in our language anymore, which is pretty sad. Okay, Michael, religions. Okay, here in America, and I know you don't follow politics, lucky you, here in America, the Republican Party almost every day is spitting out another religious fanatic from the Christian right who want to pretty much put us back under biblical law here, moving us back to the dark ages. What does Joseph say about religions, and will any religions actually survive? Because most of here in America, religions are losing members by the droves. They now estimate 56 million Americans have no affiliation with religion. So do religions survive, and what does Joseph say about religion in general?
Well, Joseph says about religion in general, religion and God are not the same thing. Now, that's a shocking statement to a lot of people, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Religion and God are not the same thing. Religion, for the most part, is control. God knows nothing about religion. God is. God is a part of you, despite religion, not because of religion. Mm-hmm. God does not say, believe in these certain terms or you're out. God says, you're part of me. Enjoy existence. Come home to me. Realize that you are free. Realize that you are liberated. Realize that I don't put any demands or judgments upon you. And realize that you are an angelic being, that I love you, no matter what you do, that I will always, always, always love you, that I will never, never, never judge you, that I will never, never, never abandon you, and I will never separate you from myself. You and I are one. How could I do those cruel things to you?
Mm-hmm. So why is it people that follow these religions can't just wake up and smell the roses? I mean, you have a God that's probably killed more people on this planet, according to the Bible, than war has. You know, if you don't believe in him in a certain way, you're going to burn in hell forever. You know, people just are not rational when it comes to really examining their beliefs. And is that just part of the fall, part of their need to be controlled?
It is, as Joseph says, at the time of the fall, there were, for want of better terms, leaders and followers. There were those who instigated or who led the change in vibration, and there were those who followed those who led the change in vibration. And because we keep coming back here, we draw to ourselves those traits that we had at the time of the fall. And so you see people emerging and causing all kinds of chaos, that were leaders at the time of the fall, and you see those people who blindly follow those creeds and those dictates who were followers at the time of the fall. And you can see that it's all head mind. There's no heart involved. If those people who sincerely believed that God was going to kill others who didn't believe what they believed went to the heart center, they would get a completely different message. Mm-hmm. How can anyone, Joseph says, harm a hair on someone else's head in the name of religion? It's an obscenity. It's nothing to do with God. And that was originally what took me out of the religion that I was brought in, which was Catholicism. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself as I was kneeling there in church, look, if I can forgive those people who have done things to me, right, and God is so much greater than I am, how can God condemn those souls that he sees as having sinned against him to everlasting damnation and pain? It was just a nonsense. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it moved me out of that frame of mind and out of that religion and away from religion. And it's difficult for many people to make that distinction between religion and spirituality. They are, in many instances, completely, completely different things.
I have to agree, and it seems that the more religion people have, although I doubt they ever read their holy books, they defend it but really have never read it, the more hateful and judgmental they are on other people who are here just experiencing, just living their lives, trying to have a good life. They're not open to, you know, it really is a brainwashing. And like you, Michael, you know, I had, you know, was in a crazy religion, you know, Jehovah's Witness as a kid. And I paid attention, you know, we had no choice but to read the Bible, which there was some pretty horrific stuff in there that a child probably should never have been privy to. But I do remember I was probably 10 or 11 when listening to the Hellfire sermons, I decided to go over to the elders and say, you know, as a kid, and said, if the Bible says God is love, then none of this could happen. Armageddon, his torturing people forever. And they just blew me off, basically said, you're just a girl, what do you know? And I said, I know more than you. And you know, you have that scripture, God is love, but you don't have any example of that really in the Bible or in the people that profess to be religious on this planet.
Yes, indeed.
It's kind of sad. And, you know, they're huge numbers. I mean, all right, we are picking up in speed of people leaving religion. But do we have enough time for enough of us to leave?
I think we've got to look at this as each soul that changes his or her mind is a soul that won't be coming back, is a soul that will escape through that hatch that Joseph talks about as an analogy, and into the greater consciousness. And I think that's what we've got to aim for every day. As you said, changing the world one soul at a time, and changing consciousness one soul at a time. And each soul that remembers its inheritance and what it really is, is a cause for celebration when that soul gets out of here and doesn't come back, and also changes the world whilst it is here, using the rest of its life to become a beacon for the light to illuminate other souls and pull them up to the point where they think, there is a different way to live. There's a different way to act. Mm-hmm. There's a different way to create. There are different things to create other than chaos and destruction and negativity. Mm-hmm. So I think there's cause to rejoice for each single soul that changes as a result of reconnecting with its God inheritance.
Right. Well, that leads me to another question for you. Do people return here because of unfinished business?
Yes, they do. And inevitably, they draw around themselves those circumstances that they've stored up from past lives. And that's not a karmic thing in the established sense of karma. It is simply a mechanism. Because we have one existence in total, those vibrations from past existences or segments of this one existence that still pull at us. So when we come here, we are surrounded by the vibrations on the level of the fall, on an earthly level, that we haven't sorted out. And we bring back to ourselves the patterns that we haven't sorted out in past lives. So we find ourselves immersed yet again in the same patterns that we have to learn from and have to let go of. So we do immerse ourselves in the past. And we do have a repeat of what's happened to us in past lives.
Right. Well, sometimes when I'm working with people and that comes up, it seems that once they become aware that it's really coming from another time and space, it makes it much easier for them to release that pattern.
It's easy to release the pattern. I think we've got to take personal responsibility. Mm. I think we've got to say, well, look, this is a pattern in my life, and it's up to me to let go of it now. The point of power is now. It might come from this life, it might come from a past life, but it's all the same life in God terms. It's all the same life in soul terms. So now is the point at which I let go of that. The first thing is to recognize it in your life, to look at the patterns in your life and think to yourself, why the heck am I in the same situation that I was in 5 years ago and thought I'd got rid of?
Right.
And you're in the same situation because you haven't gotten rid of it yet. Mm. You haven't addressed it. You haven't recognized it. And I think it's a good exercise to, at regular intervals in our lives, review our lives.
Absolutely.
Not judgmentally, but to look at our lives and say, have I been here before? And if I have, why? And to not say to ourselves, well, God's plonked me in this situation again, but to perhaps say, well, perhaps I've put myself in this situation again. And perhaps I've put myself in this situation again because I've acted in manner A rather than acting in manner B. Let's try manner B. And if you try manner B, you'll find that manner A disappears.
Right. Well, sometimes the only way to change a situation is to change your reaction to it. And that is the lesson.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. How important, or is it important, to have a sense of humor and laugh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I personally couldn't get through life without this twisted sense of humor that I've got.
Oh, me either, believe
me. Guides. Sorry?
I said me either, believe me.
No, absolutely. The guides that come through, they are not pole-faced, serious people. Joseph is, of course, serious when he's delivering his message because he has to deliver his message. But there are instances in the books when he will make a pun or he will sort of collapse in laughter because he sees what we're doing as ironic. And on a day-to-day basis, when I commune with the guides that are around me, there is a great deal of humor that comes through. And if there isn't a sense of humor on higher levels, Maria, I don't want to go.
Me either. That's what I say. If all these fanatical Christians are going to heaven, I'm hoping to go to hell. But, you know, it's kind of funny because I post a lot of stuff on social media and I always have some sarcastic one-liner that I add to the poster. And I actually had one man say, Maria, your one-liners are killing me and taking away from the seriousness of the post, but he loves it. And I think that without humor, my show would have been over a long time ago because there's really nothing humorous about the news, but yet I can get people laughing about it as long as they can change their perspective.
Yes, indeed. And as you say, laughter does change the perspective. We start laughing at ourselves and at the situations around us. We see them for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
We give ourselves the option of saying, well, this is absurd.
Right.
I better change this. You know, I can stand back from it. I can change it. I can send light into it. But first, we have to recognize that there's something wrong. And we can do that lightly as well, as you say. We can do that through humor.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure God has a great sense of humor.
I got to tell you this. I probably have more listeners in the spirit world than in the physical world. And they all love my sense of humor. So if I'm making other beings happy, what the hell? Why not? But without humor, I mean, I don't know how anybody could exist in this reality. And I find that, especially, you know, covering the news and all these ridiculous stories and laws and whatnot, you know, I bring back a lot of my, you know, teenage years as a kid in Brooklyn, you know, with a lot of my little slogans that I guess people never heard of if they didn't grow up in Brooklyn, like, this person must think we're as dumb as they look. And people need to laugh a little bit, because if you don't laugh, you're going to really be stuck in this illusion. And it's an illusion of fear and control. And I don't want to live my life that way.
Yes. But by having a lack of humor in our lives, we solidify, we crystallize our dominant thoughts. We're sort of wallpapering from inside every day, putting another layer on. And that, of course, leads to mental anguish, and it also leads to illness. Inflexibility leads to illness. Mm-hmm. Immobility leads to illness. And through humor, we crack those layers of wallpaper. We shatter them. We become flexible, and we're able to see through the patterns that we put around ourselves and say, well, this is nonsense. I shouldn't be thinking this way. I shouldn't be acting this way. Lightly, I will do something else. I won't condemn myself because I've been that way for years. I'll, in a lightness of heart, change to a different channel. I'll change to the God channel. Not a religious channel, but a God channel from within that will allow me to see things as they truly are. And I can laugh and I can move on.
Exactly, because, you know, if people can just keep the perspective that this is just a, you know, computer-generated game that we created. We just came down to play for a while in our little avatars and not overreact to everything that goes on. I think there'd be a whole lot happier people and a whole lot less people on pharmaceutical drugs.
Yes, indeed, yeah. And also not to be so serious about the way that people perceive us, and not to fight our little corner as much as we do, but because it is a little corner. We've got to take the greater view and say, well, they haven't learned yet. They haven't expanded in consciousness yet. They haven't reconnected to the Godhead yet. But I have, and so I can see through them and past them, and I'm not going to let their vibrations get to me. And I'm certainly not going to reinforce those vibrations by sending similar vibrations back to them, which then go out into the field and strengthen the field and maintain the world that I don't want as right. it is at the moment.
Right. Or do anything to jeopardize your being able to get the hell out of here when you put this spacesuit down and not have to
Absolutely.
Be stuck here on what I refer to as Planet of the Apes. And people like that. I love when I see my listeners reusing some of my old slogans on social media. It gives me joy. It makes me laugh. Michael, one last thing, because we only have a few minutes. I know Joseph talked a little on orbs, and a lot of people are starting to see orbs, starting to photograph orbs. I have a friend in Arizona. She's got a fabulous website. It's called orblistener.com. I mean, she gets like, it looks like a blizzard of orbs in her backyard almost every night.
Yes.
Can you explain what orbs are?
Yes, we were once told that orbs are glimpses into the spirit world. They are, if you like, thin areas of perception through which we can glimpse what is beyond. We were once staying in a hotel, and we photographed the hallway of the hotel, and we found an orb, and within the orb, when it was magnified, was a priest saying Mass, and it looked as though he was marrying a couple. Hmm. But we could see this very definitely within the orb. And there are chances, I think, because of the advance in technology, for people to realize that there is more around them than they can usually see. And I feel that as technology gets more and more advanced, it's a double-edged sword, of course, but I think some of the aspects of technology will be able to show us to a greater extent that we are part of a greater world. So I've no doubt that the orbs that we capture are examples of a thin wall, if you like, a thin barrier.
Right.
And we are glimpsing through that barrier into a greater world.
Right, so there's a whole lot of stuff happening in the space between things.
Yes.
We may not see it, but it's there. It's like people, all of a sudden, they're sitting alone and they get a whiff of an aftershave or something and they can't imagine where's that from.
Yes. Or something moves or they hear something. You know, just to say, look, you're not alone.
Right.
You're not alone. You're part of a bigger family. You're part of your own family still. We've not gone anywhere. We're still connected to you.
Uh-huh.
So embrace that connection. Embrace the fact that you're not alone, and embrace the fact every day that no matter what you see on a physical level, you're only accepting a small part of a bigger story, a bigger picture.
Absolutely.
And you owe it to yourself to investigate that bigger picture, to throw out anything that offends you, but to accept the things that don't offend you, and then to move on from those and to continue to learn and to grow.
Right. Just make better choices. Choose to be happy. It's that easy. Just choose to be happy. Anybody negative or negatives in your life, just get rid of it. You know, there is no have-tos down here. The only thing we have to do is live until we don't.
Yes.
Well, Michael, I can't wait for my...
Right.
I can't believe it. Can't wait for that either. I was in some fabulous places last night, and then I woke up. And it is interesting when you talk about being in the sleep state, because you are absolutely, totally unaware of your body.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, that is a really good way for people to understand the disconnect when you do leave your body for the last time.
Yes.
So I want to thank you for that. Well, I'm waiting then. I will wait impatiently for From Here to Infinity. I can't wait to read it, Michael.
She'll be with you in a few days.
Great, and we'll talk again soon.
Look forward to that. I'd be delighted always, Maria.
Always. Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Michael Rakia, check out his work, josephspeaks.com. I like all his books, and I can't wait to read the new one. I'll be back tomorrow with all the news we can stand, and thanks for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.